Hello and welcome to another episode of Africa's Victors. My name's Coride and today we are travelling all the way to the Giriama tribe, which is present day Kenya. Okay, let's go. Mecca Tilili was born in 1860 into the Giriama tribe. She was 53 when the British began their colonization of Kenya. The British started by taking men from her tribe and making them work on these plantations in neighboring areas, and she didn't like it. Women didn't usually get involved in matters of politics, but because Mecca Tilili was a widow, it was culturally acceptable for her to speak up. So she did. She spoke about the practices of the colonizers and how it was unacceptable for them to impose high taxes on the Giriama people. In addition to that, the British took their men for free labor and would conscript them, or were trying to conscript them, for World War One. Skrr. Can we pause for a minute? Because my understanding of World War One was that as much as it was a world war, that's what they called it, really it was the Europeans really fighting the Europeans. That's the pictures that they put out there in real life. So it turns out it was more of a world war than the pictures showed us, because here they were, conscripted Africans for a war that had nothing to do with us, and wanted essentially just free soldiers. And as bad as that is, or as unacceptable as that is, the real issue here is when we celebrate the achievements of those who fought in World War One, why am I not seeing pictures of Africans? I mean, maybe I'm wrong, because someone sent me a picture, because I need to see these pictures. And even if you send me a picture, is it the picture that is generally circulated, or is that just one picture? Because I've seen that one picture of like Indians fighting, or a picture of Indians one time. That doesn't count as evidence, because while that's of course a true picture, it's not the picture that's generally circulated whenever we are celebrating the achievements of those who fought in World War One. Additionally, whenever we're giving out medals and stuff, where are the World War One Africans? Where are their families? And why are they not receiving some form of accolades and some form of recognition? That's just me. I just have questions. So if anybody here can answer them, if anybody listening can answer, I would love to hear it. Okay, back to the story. So we know that Mecca Tilili was not a fan of this. She wasn't having any of it. And so on the 13th of August, 1913, at a public baraza, Mecca Tilili boldly declared that no Giriama men would be conscripted to fight a war on behalf of any white man. It's not going to happen. The colonial administrator of the time, Arthur Champion, known to the Giriama people as Chembe, obviously didn't get the message. So she came ready. She had her props ready. I love that. She actually came ready. She knew that her words were not going to be sufficient. And so she decided to show him or demonstrate. So Mecca Tilili brought with her a hen and her chicks, and she challenged Chembe to pick up one of the chicks and observe what would happen when he did that. So Chembe got one of his guards to do it. And upon attempting to pick up one of these chicks, the mother hen, like ferociously attacked the enemy, and he let go of the chick like real quick. I love how Africans in general are just storytellers. They, or we, from the beginning of time that has been recorded, we have been sharing stories and telling stories and using them to get our message across. It's actually amazing. And this is another example of that. So anyway, Mecca Tilili's message was that if the British dared to touch any of the Giriama men, the reaction they'd receive would be the same as the one that the mother hen had just displayed. Whoa, 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 whoa. I love that. We don't just say what we mean. We show what we mean. This sis came ready. Well, she didn't just say, listen, don't touch our men because we're going to come for you. She said, I'm gonna actually give you a full-on illustration. I'm going to give you a full illustration of what will happen to you. You can see with your own two eyes, right? What will happen if you come for us? What? It's just amazing to me. We don't just say what we mean, we show what we mean. It's such an amazing thing through storytelling. It reminds me a lot of Yenegra. So Princess Yenegra, episode 1, if you haven't listened to it, go and check it out, where she used the field of wheat to tell her father that she wasn't happy with him, basically. You gotta listen to the story to fully understand. But the analogies that we just use to get the message home is really, really impressive, I must say. Chembe, in annoyance, pulled out a gun and shot the mother hen. He then commented that those who refused would face the same fate. Oh, wow. Mekatilele was livid. She swiftly moved in and punched Chembe to the ground. Like, he fell on the floor. And now another guard who saw Mekatilele nervously pulled out his gun and then ended up shooting a Giriama warrior who was standing nearby. And this started a whole fight. Mekatilele was not going to allow these foreigners to come and ruin their lives and their lands and things that belong to them. And this all stemmed from a prophecy that Mepoho gave to the Giriama people. I was like, who's Mepoho? So a quick backstory on Mepoho. Mepoho was a diviner. Everything about her was mystical. From her birth to her, inverted commas, death. I have to say inverted commas because you will see why in a minute. So Mepoho would prophesy about things that were to come in the Giriama tribe. One such prophecy was the one that led to the focal point of this story, pretty much. One day she brought the people together and she said that she had an important prophecy to give them. She instructed the people to do a spiritual dance. And then while they performed it, she sat on her three-legged stool. As the dance was being performed, Mepoho was possessed by a spirit and began to narrate the prophecy. She said that a strange people would come to their land and their hair would be like sizzle fibers and they would take snuff. Snuff was tobacco. They were coming with flying vessels and vehicles that would move on land and on water. Their coming would lead to the erosion of the Giriama traditions, including the fact that girls would marry young and have children. Pause. This took me by surprise a little bit. I was like, what do you mean girls would marry young and have children? And so I had to read a little bit more, and it appears, I can't confirm because there's not much information on it, but at the time it wasn't particularly normal within their tribe or for women to get married young. And so the coming of these foreigners would be the beginning of those things. And that got me thinking. I was like, can someone, if anybody knows a little bit more about this, I'd be really interested to find out. That it seemed as though, it has been like sold to us, as it were, that the practice of like marrying young was normal. So we see it on the continent a little bit now, or quite in certain places you see within certain cultures that young women are forced essentially to get married. And based on this prophecy, or based on this extract, it appears that it maybe wasn't always normal. Or is it only within the Kenyan community that it wasn't normal? Very, very interesting, because if this is something that was continent-wide, is it possible that before that, or is it possible that the idea of marrying young was something introduced by others and not an African thing? I'm interested to find out. So, yes, back to the prophecy. And Mepoho said their land would be taken away from them as well. The moment she finished telling the prophecy, she told the people that she was t- tired and that she didn't want to stick around to see these prophecies come to pass, essentially. And so she was going away. And then immediately the ground beneath her opened and swallowed her alive. What? What is this? I mean, if any of you guys have listened or watched the trailer to Africa's Victors, I did say that there was probably going to be some juju or some really interesting things that you can't really explain at some point. And here we go. This is it. Because this isn't something I can explain unless it's quicksand. But even quicksand doesn't take you as quickly as this. Immediately, she just disappeared and it was solid before and now it's gone. Wow. Imagine being there to witness this. My first thing would have been like, this woman has now given us a prophecy. Okay, I have questions. I'm going to wait to the end and ask these questions. But then the moment you're about to ask your questions, she's gone. I would have wanted to know, listen, are they coming tomorrow or do I have time? Is it in my generation or do I have to tell my kids and prepare them? Can we stop them or do we just have to accept the fate that this is going to happen to us? And then when she says that she's not sticking around to see it happen, I'd be like, right, so should I not stick around? Should I also have an exit plan? Should I disappear too? What are you saying? And then you'd see the ground open and swallow her. And then you'd be like, oh, is that what you meant by not sticking around? Because if that's what you meant, I think I'm going to see how this plays out. I'm not doing that. Wow. Or were they just not bothered? Because does the ground swallow people regularly? I have so many questions. Please, I would love to hear your questions, what you think, how this would have played out, or whether the story has been embellished a little bit. Yes, please do comment, get in touch with us, check us out on Instagram using the @TheVemoye, VEMOYE Foundation, all one word. But yeah, it'd be interesting to hear what you have to say. So the moment the Brits arrived with their sizzle fiber hair and their tobacco, they were like, yo, we've been expecting you guys. You know, we were told you were coming. And that would have been what gave Mekatilili the kind of boldness that she had, because she knew that they were coming. Apparently she herself had prophesied that the Brits were coming. Of course they were not called the Brits at the time, but she had prophesied that foreigners were coming, strangers were coming, so she also was prepared. So back to where we left the story, Mekatilili punched Chimbi and the Giriama warrior gets shot and it's a full-blown fight that has broken out. Major problem. But Mekatilili decides that she's not going to give up and she's going to figure out a way to fight these unwelcome strangers. So what Mekatilili decides to do is start dancing. Wow. So she decides to do this dance called the Kifudu dance. The Kifudu dance is usually done at funeral ceremonies. And of course, in this case, the death of the Giriama warrior triggered her to decide to use this as her means of getting the attention of those who lived around her. And when I say around, I'm really talking about 100 kilometers. Mekatilili traveled 100 kilometers to push her message that we need to stand up to the British. She also employed the help of her friend, the witch doctor, Wanje, who administered a sacred oath to ensure that no one would cooperate with the British. Here's my other question. I just have another question with regards to these things that they're doing. I find it particularly interesting that whenever they would use incantations or juju, in this case, that they would only use it on their own people. I'm confused as to why the incantations are not used on the enemy that you are fighting. Does it not work on them? I don't know. Does it only work on your own people? I just a little bit puzzled. Wouldn't it have made sense to use the juju on the bad guys rather than to use it to control your own people? I don't know. But anyway, that's what they did. At the height of the uprising, both Wanje and Mekatilili were arrested. Mekatilili was sentenced to 5 years in prison, but in the spirit of all things Mekatilili, she decided she was going to escape, and that's exactly what she did. She and Wanje escaped, and the thing is, where she was in prison was 500 miles away from her home tribe. But that didn't stop Mekatilili, because obviously we are obviously building a picture here where we are realizing this woman is a force. I don't understand. She journeyed over 500 miles. Some accounts say 600 miles. I mean, what's 100 miles between friends? Like, she journeyed for hundreds of miles through wilderness and through ridiculous environments to get back to her people in Giriama. And the moment she got there, she didn't even take time to rest. She went straight back to causing trouble for the British. What? What kind of boldness is this? What kind of resolve is this? How do you believe in something so much to not let anything keep you down? The kind of strength and resolve that I have seen within the characters that we have spoken of throughout the series have left me awestruck. My jaw is beyond dropped. I just can't get my head around how much these people loved their people, how much they loved their land, how much they cared enough to fight for it and die for it. And it leaves me thinking, do we have that same affection for our own people today, or for our lands today? I think at some point we lost love for our land and our people. We've moved from we to I. We've become so individual in our pursuit of things, in our pursuit of success, in our pursuit of happiness, to the extent that it feels like we've kind of given up on the dreams that our ancestors had for us, or they left for us. If any of the protagonists that we have explored over these last few weeks were to come back to the continent today, I don't know what they would say. And I'm referring to the attitudes that we have for one another. I just feel like when we read the stories of these heroes, they lived in a time where we was more important than I. And if we have any hope of building or rebuilding the continent, I think we have to find this again. We have to get past our own selfish desires and get back to this kind of love for one another and care for our continent. Okay, back to the story. So Mekatilili was arrested again, obviously, because, you know, when you break out of jail and you return back to where your jailers are, they're obviously going to arrest you again. It's only right. Right? So they arrested her again, but this time the people weren't having it. They said, no, absolutely not. So war broke out between the Giriama people and the Brits. This wasn't ideal because this was right at the height of World War One. So the Brits were already under a lot of strain in terms of resources. So another mini war was not what they needed. It simply wasn't worth sinking funds into an area they were struggling to keep hold of. So they freed Mekatilili in 1919, and she became the head of the Women's Council. Amazing. Amazing. I'm so inspired by her resolve. But if she was to return today to the same place that she fought for, it would not be a happy moment, because today the space where the Giriama people live and dwell today is one of the poorest regions of Kenya. And it makes us think about whether we're doing our ancestors proud. They made so many sacrifices. They fought so hard.
but there's still so much suffering and injustice. And are we doing anything about it as descendants? Are we taking responsibility in terms of being our brother's keeper and looking after the land that God has given us? I don't know. I don't have the answers. We're all learning and thinking and growing together. Well, if you liked that story, please do share it. Follow us on Instagram as well, and let's keep the conversation going. You can find us using the @TheVemoye, V-E-M-O-Y-E, Foundation, all one word. If you'd like to find out more about our organisation, please do check out our website, www.thevemoyefoundation.com. You can also sign up to our £1 pledge, where you'll donate just £1 a month to the work that we are doing. That's it from me today. And remember, Mecca Talele lived for we and not me. And maybe we could learn a thing or two from that. See you again next week for the final episode of this series. Bye.